Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. This is a pleasure because I get to answer a certain criticism of me or the work and clarify a few points. So listen, this should be somewhat helpful, but it's more for me to make sure I'm being clear about what I'm saying and give myself a chance to clear up some of my language. So people have asked or challenged me on the topic of whether repression drives suffering. So first of all, again, go to ChatGPT and find out for yourself how much science there is. Ask for the studies linking directly different forms of suffering to buried emotions and put that to rest, that I'm not just the only one, that this is a big topic, but not everybody's aware of it. So educate yourself that way. But that's not how I know. Here's how I know. It's in my direct experience. So this work breaks down to two core fears that are buried. You could say, if you imagine an iceberg, it's under the water, these core fears. They're frozen. So at the tip of the iceberg is all the suffering that science says that it creates, from depression to anxiety to addiction, relationship issues. But also, we stay safe and get love by having belief systems, philosophies, doing spiritual methods that bypass. All of this is at the tip of the iceberg. But under the water, it's much simpler. Hidden in the body are these core fears. We break them down this way. The first core fear is the fear of feeling and expressing whatever you've buried. Some people, their first core fear involves anger repression. Some people, it's hurt and sadness repression. But we all share the fact that this is our first core fear for purposes of practice here. The second core fear is the fear that goes with the first one. If I express anger as an anger repressor, I'm afraid I'll be humiliated. I'm afraid I'll be rejected, or I'll lose people. That fear is so intrinsically tied to the first core fear that you can't really process one without the other. If you haven't discovered these fears in your body, I can assure you that they're there if they're suffering, so you just want to verify it. But here's how I really discovered it. It was a process that me and Dan, through the course of almost 10 years, developed. But in my daily life, here's how I discovered the first core fear. So whether it's buried hurt, sadness for you, or buried anger like me, I discover it by exhausting absolutely everything else. I discovered the first core fear through suffering and then bypassing. So I was in a relationship with somebody who repressed hurt and sadness, so he would get angry, and that was his first response and a trigger. I had never let anyone like that anywhere near me in a close relationship because I was bullied as a kid. So when I was bullied, my needs weren't met, to say the least. So those of us with buried anger often were criticized or hurt, were criticized or bullied or rejected in childhood, and then therefore fundamental needs for safety, love, and approval aren't met. But if you bury anger, the system protects you from feeling it. So it stores the emotion that's the scariest, or the emotions. And then from that point on, with those repressed emotions in place, we can't feel them. That produces our self-protective suffering. Our identities, our everything that's safer than that, then becomes our life as we develop our persona. Ego, if you will. So when I was in this relationship, this was after years of not only storing anger and not knowing it, and having chronic pain for 25 years that was storing the anger, there I was in a relationship with someone who could get angry. I had done enough somatic work to let someone in my life like that. It's like my consciousness chose that person, but I wasn't aware of why. At the surface, if you can imagine like an iceberg to represent how repression drives things, at the surface just means what I was experiencing was falling in love with someone, just like you would. But under the water, it was repression driving it. And so what I mean by that is when he would get angry, his big energy that I was attracted to in the beginning turned to, I don't like that. And I didn't know how I got there because he would just get suddenly angry. And I would get quiet because I had an awakening experience and a shift and done some somatic work. I couldn't detect my shutdown in that until I became more skillful and I heard the conditioning that was shutting me down. It was hard for me to say something. I noticed that. And I pulled away and I noticed that in the chronic pain was the conditioning of I'm angry at him. But what came up to cover that up, if you will, was I have to punish him. I couldn't even hear that for the first 48 years of my life, that inside the chronic pain in relationship was if somebody was angry, they had to punish them by disconnecting and quietly pulling away. This is how I bullied my bullies. Once they aggressively, overtly bullied me, I internalized my anger and then quietly hated and was angry at angry people, aggressive people, or bullying, any energy like that. So there I was discovering that everything that I was doing in response to his anger was coming from my buried anger. Let me explain. The shutdown was to protect me from getting angry. When I went into inquiry to find out what I was getting out of freezing or shutting down, it was to stay safe from getting angry. First core fear. When I would pull away and hear the condition that says I wanted to punish him by being quiet, well, that was to stay safe from getting angry at him. The pain itself, when I would say, what am I getting out of that? It would be, well, because it's safer to be in pain than it is to get angry at him. And the anger repression was creating the pain. When I went to medicate the pain or alleviate it or rest with it, what do I get out of that? Well, then I don't have to get angry at him if I can just make the pain better. A few times, even though I had done a bunch of work, I would feel hurt. And then I would say, what do I get out of being hurt here? Just to see. And it would be like, well, then I won't get angry at him. There were times when I felt shame. I discovered, well, that protects me from getting angry at him. And deep inside the chronic pain, I found after he had been angry a few times, I hate him. I saw my bullies come up. I've hated them too, my whole life, but I called it my body. I called it pain. I said, what do I get out of hating them? Oh, I stay safe from getting angry. What do I get out of when he apologizes after he's angry and I just say, okay? Oh, I stay safe from getting angry at him. See, I didn't discover the first core fear. It was driving me. I finally just surrendered and just called that. That's the first core fear of KI. The second core fear was that there was no way to process buried anger outside the context of relationship. There was no way to even transform, I found out, because it's always been about relationship. It started with mom and dad, the repression, the ego development, the suffering. So we come right back to these romantic relationships to replay the trauma. I needed to discover authenticity. And ironically, I discovered it with the scariest archetype, the person who would get angry. That relationship became my deepest freedom, because it showed me that I was doing everything I possibly could to meet the need for safety. That was a childhood need connected to the buried anger. By not getting angry, I stayed safe. If you hear the children outside, let me stop and tell you this real quick before I get back to the core fears. Okay, there's no children being hurt. I live in a neighborhood of kids and they play. And it's interesting because there's been no knock on the door. There's tons of kids here, and you'll hear them in the background. They take out my trash. I give them $1 a bag. They try to swindle each other. So one will say they're coming to get the trash because they want to make the dollar, and a friend will come first and get it. But if I don't tell who it is, I'll give the trash to the first friend, even though I've said to the other guy, I'm going to give him the trash and the dollar. So when the other boy came up that day, I said, well, I just gave the trash. He said, I can't believe you gave that. He stomped away, yelling at me, but he couldn't say it to my face. And I appreciated that he was angry. And he came back the next day, and he said, I just want you to know that if I say I'm going to get the trash, I'll be here to get it. I said, you know what? You're right. I need to recognize that. If you're going to come get the trash, then I'm going to hold you to your word, and I'm going to give that trash to you. Oh, the glory of relationship. See, that's the same topic. Anyway, if you hear kids in the background, they play these games that are pretty, they're not violent, no kids are being hurt, but, you know, it's summertime, so you're going to hear that. Back to the second core fear, there was no way to do this processing of the first core fear outside the context of relationship. Because, again, the anger was buried in the relationships in my childhood and was the foundation of my ego and suffering. I finally just discovered it. And so the second core fear is like, if I express this anger to him, I'm going to be rejected. Even though he was getting angry and I didn't reject him for it, but I was trying to punish him, shut down, freeze, and train him from an unconscious level. I even have called it grooming before. I'm trying to control my environment, you know, as an anger repressor. It's like I realize I'm demanding safety here. You need to stop. But I couldn't see that I didn't have any boundaries. That I didn't even let him know who I was. I didn't really know who I was. That all my spiritual realization didn't get to the authenticity. And so I was just creating suffering in all these different ways to avoid the first core fear, the anger, but then terribly afraid to express it because of the second core fear, I'll be rejected. I'll lose him or everyone. So these are the two core fears. It wasn't that I theorized or speculated and see if I could prove the theory. It was that I tried to avoid this my whole fucking life. Are you kidding me? This was hard fought, hard won, as they say. It just comes from a long bypass. But don't trust me because these are good questions. You just trust but verify. Pick up the tools and you'll see it. Okay, so another thing is, Scott, why do you filter everything out of or through repression? I've heard that like a couple of times. Like it's all you talk about. Well, I don't do that. We do that. I'm not trying to be flippant. I'm telling you, go educate yourself through ChatGPT. Use specific prompts. If you say trash can, give me the studies on how trash cans create cancer. You won't get anything. Or how Cookie Monster creates Lyme disease. You won't get it. But if you say, show me the link between disease and buried emotions. Show me the link between addiction and buried emotions. Show me the link between mental health, relationship issues, and buried emotions. Then you'll start to see it. Show me the studies. Once you educate yourself, I'll just tell you, that's not how why I always talk about repression. But it's good to know that the science is really there. The reason that I talk about it is because we're always filtering, like the science says, our experience is always being filtered through that. So if I'm a people pleaser, it just means I have to be good because I hold anger back. It's the pleasure pain cycle. I create suffering because I survive as a false self. It just means I people please, hold anger back. If you imagine an iceberg, again, at the tip of the iceberg, I'm going along with things or I'm angry all the time. But those are the things that appear at the tip because of what I hold back. And so therefore, identification is coming from repression. Of course, I want to talk about that because I'm a non-duality teacher. I write books about this. And where our duality comes from is a critical question. So I've discovered that having to be good is the duality. And then I had to hide and bury all the bad parts. So non-duality has to include all the bad parts, not just the good parts. There's a lot of anger repressors who are suffering because anger repression is a major source of many forms of suffering coming to spirituality. Of course I'm going to filter everything through repression because that's what we're doing. We're trying to stay safe and get love and approval because our emotional needs weren't met, which I'll get to, you know, when we were kids. So then the other thing that I've been criticized on is, why do you always talk about anger repression? Well, because that's my experience. And again, we non-dual teachers are not good at being really authentic and talking about our shadows or the source of anything and being transparent. That's me and my colleagues, so to speak, who do this. There's a lot of books that talk about the absolute and awareness and that depersonalize everything. There's, of course, an element of truth to that. The non-dual is not personal in the very foundational sense. It's not, there's no separate you there who can claim, oh, it's mine. But at the same time, if that realization is not embodied, the non-dual is not actually experienced. It's not lived and embodied. It's just an experience that you had or something that you think about. It's an experiential knowing. And how do you know the non-dual experience if you don't know where the duality comes from? So the reason I had to be good, again, was because of the anchor repression. So anything that was bad, shameful addictions, my anger itself, those are all the bad parts. They couldn't have been included, see? And that's why I kept suffering. And yet I was a non-dual teacher. Of course, now I'm going to filter everything through the very root of our suffering if I want to talk about non-duality. And I'm going to stick to my experience because the bypass includes the inauthenticity. If you look around, you'll see it. Okay, so does that, nobody asked this, but I'll answer it. Do I process anymore? I don't think anybody's asked that, or they haven't in a long time. Maybe they have, but more than like 2 years ago. Yes, I do. But not every day like you guys do who are starting and doing it, because when I go into my body in relationship, which is how I develop the work, to see if I have unmet needs in relationship, at a certain point, there stopped being a response to needing love and approval and safety from others. That doesn't mean that there's not something there. And the way that the unconscious works is, not too long ago, I had a urinary issue that I had never connected to repression, and I saw that it was connected to it. So I started processing that. And it's a simple thing that I had to make up an illness in my urinary system in sixth grade to stay home from school and safe from the bullies. So then later on, my system developed something, and it never occurred to me that that came from the trauma. So one day I was just playing around with something that I was showing someone else, and I pulled that up, the urinary thing, to see if there was any connection, to just be curious, and it was connected to something that I had not had access to. It was actually in the back of my head, because I always knew that the urinary thing was in part neurological. I had a lot of neurological issues. So then I started processing that. If I would say I'm done, I wouldn't be open to, why would I deny myself deeper freedom? So I'm always open to process, but do I do it all the time? No. I don't have a reason to. I'm enjoying my life like unbelievably. And it includes processing when needed. But my whole suffering, my whole life was making sure I just didn't upset anyone. That was most of it. Like, I can't just be myself because somebody's going to be upset, or I'm going to hurt someone, or they're going to leave me. Even as a teacher with anger repression. So yeah, I'm open to processing, but I'm not doing it every day. Oh, and the urinary thing is a lot better. In fact, I'm not even sure if it's there. I used to have to go to the restroom all the time, and I really don't. So I don't track that once it's much better. But I'll go back into it every now and then when I'm in the restroom just to see. But that's the beauty of it. It can come and go in your life when you get to a certain place. Okay, so other things, other than filtering everything through repression, everything is anger repression. What's the next thing? Is this just like an endless path where you never stop processing? Well, I think I just answered it. But understand it this way. We create the resistance and the suffering. So when we say it's going to take a long time, that keeps us safe. Asking questions about how long it will take will keep us safe. Any of that kind of mental activity that keeps us out of the body has a function. The idea that this will take a long time or that it shouldn't has a function to keep us safe and get us love. So we want to be even more earnest than just asking those sort of frontline questions. We want to go into the body and verify that, yes, this is the case. These two core fears are active again, saying, you know, this will never end, or whatever it's saying. But we're actually afraid of real freedom at the unconscious level, and you need to discover that. Because otherwise your mind will say, it's like, Dad, when is this over? The trip? But, man, we create our own suffering to meet our needs. This is how we end suffering, is to take ownership and make that conscious. And we resist that. So for us to then say, when is it over? Well, that's not trusting our actual experience, that we need safety and love at the unconscious level until we don't anymore around our emotional experience. That takes however long it takes, depending on your level of resistance, your capacity, your skill, whether you connect with us, those of us who develop the work. Those are all variables. This is not just be with what is. This is not just let things come and go or anything that you've learned. This is a different way of processing experience. Okay. The kids are still playing out there. They'll play until like midnight. It's already 10 p.m. But I don't hear them. I only notice them when I'm doing a podcast because I don't want you guys to be interrupted, but I normally don't hear them until they're knocking on my door for trash. Okay, so I want to go through this whole list here. The time question. And then, okay, yeah. So authenticity, no, it's not a belief or a story or an identity. It's the seeing of that mechanism. That's important to see. And then, yeah, why is it a linear path? Why is it in time? Why is it a process? Well, that's in the time-related questions. Because again, well, there are a lot of good answers to that. One is, we don't want this freedom that we're talking about. To actually be transformed, you would have to feel stuff that you're buried. That just takes a while because it's not safe. We have to process that until we actually experience that it's actually safe to feel something. Oh, it's actually safe to express that in different ways. And as we do, we're just transformed. We can't have that overnight. We don't want that, remember, at the unconscious level. So it's a linear path because we actually, a lot of us pick up a spiritual method and we actually try to just feel better temporarily, but we'll deny it. Now, how this happens is the need for safety is met through a process that regulates your system. This process does that. But this process has another marker, which is the transmuting of the repression. So not only will you feel regulated, which is what we really want, is to feel safer, or safe temporarily, but then you're getting to the root of suffering with a second marker. That's what makes the transformation happen. You don't want to use a method just to feel better. You want a method to regulate you like this does, but you don't want that to be just it. Because, well, that takes longer. Speaking of the time thing, that's the resistance. Oh, and then here's another one. This is sort of a criticism. It's also a concern that people have. That you'll be angry at everyone. If you're an anger repressor, won't I be angry at everyone? No, you already are, but you buried it. See, this is a denial, is what it is. You know, so let me express what it was like to get angry so you can hear this. most of it was with my close relationships where I needed to. It's just needed because I was so quiet through the years and so many different very clever trauma responses, you know, that show me the core fears, like I was explaining, that without getting angry, I couldn't even know what my true thoughts and feelings were in relationship. It's kind of embarrassing to say, but spirituality helped me just like obscure all of that, the authenticity part. I just needed to express anger in some close relationships. But in the end, it ended up not being about anger. It was about unmet needs. So when I was a kid, again, I was bullied, criticized. I was a very sensitive kid. So I just held all my anger back. What I needed was to feel safe in my being and to feel like I'm already loved as I am, but I couldn't with buried anger. So when I started to express anger, what I immediately noticed is that my needs aren't being met. I didn't even know I had these needs for safety, for love. And I went into process instead and saw that that's there because I hold the anger back. I wouldn't have the needs trying to get them met through another person if I didn't have the buried anger, so I kept processing. I didn't get my needs met through the other person, but if I didn't express those things, I was going to stay angry, or you'll keep it buried is what I'm saying. We have to express the anger to discover our needs. And that's the transformation, because it's not about anger. It's about how we create suffering by holding anger back. And authenticity is the way to our real freedom and connection and relationship, and that's what I experienced. The only time I got angry professionally was I got angry at a client. I had to take ownership of this. It's the only time it happened like this. I've gotten a little bit angry at others who couldn't hear me on something. But this was different. This day, something was happening again in my close relationships, and I wasn't expressing a boundary. Because what was going on with the person in my close relationship was like pretty crazy at that time. And they were really imagining some really scary things in their family. And really, they needed mental health treatment. And the environment was not safe at that time. And I couldn't do anything about it. Still had enough repression. But you know how it is, like when you're halfway, or not halfway, but you're doing the work, and you still don't, you still can't express that emotion freely. And so when it comes out like too much. So because the person close to me was having a mental health issue, I held my anger back during that because they needed help. That's, by the way, how codependency happens. And when I got into a session, I got angry at the client. The client really wasn't doing anything except for just being how we often are, is like stubborn and not looking at something. And it was just like making me I don't want to try to make people do the work. So I was just frustrated by that. It's like, I don't want to sit here and make you do it. I've showed you how to do it. But my anger came up and it was disproportionate. I had to apologize to him. But what it was is I didn't have boundaries in my personal relationship. And because I've been doing anger repression work, this line between what was there in my personal relationship, my professional, just kind of broke for a second. But it taught me so much. More than just feel bad about that. That's a cheap learning. If that's all you get out of something like that. I felt some of that. But no, what I learned was, and I didn't learn it with my mind, that boundaries are important. And boundaries are just expressing what's true. So after that, along with another moment when during my process, I dealt with a trust issue. Those things came together at a similar time, and I started having boundaries in all my relationships after that. And I deal with clients very differently now, with a lot more love and compassion because I've done my work. But I'm telling you, when you're coming out of anger repression, you don't want to keep appearing as a good and peaceful person. Somebody asked me once, Scott, if you got angry at someone, well, I wouldn't be here. And I said, if I'm an anger repressing teacher who taught a bypass to anger repressors for 10 years, if I don't get angry at someone, you should run. Because that's just, again, be me trying to like do a method that I don't live and then trying to get my needs met that way and appearing a certain way for you so you'll stay and just so I can make money and suffer. No, thank you. So I had to get over that hump, and you will too, that anger will come up. But it'll be so helpful because you'll see what your needs are. And then I could express after that, both of my personal and professional relationships, what was clearly true for me, which means sometimes I can't do a session. Sometimes I don't want to, and I won't. And therefore, when I show up, it means I want to be there. There was a certain point when I was doing this work, it was so beautiful. I cherish this, and I'll leave you with this. Because I had anger repression my whole life, even though I was a peaceful person at the surface, it doesn't mean I was truly comfortable and like connected to you when I was with you. And even I used the presence to hide that from myself and even as chronic pain. See, I was like holding all that sort of pressure there. It's crazy. But so when I would work with people, I would have chronic pain. Eventually, I learned that that was the anger repression and the chronic pain. So I finally processed and I saw that when my pain would flare up, sometimes working, when I was just sitting with people, it means I wasn't being authentic with them. And I used that to become much more authentic with people. And I started to really want to be in every session. And it was a combination of having boundaries and actually processing that like I wouldn't feel any somatic resistance to just sitting with people. It just felt very good. And I could ask them questions and be more engaged and share myself. God, all of that came from an emotion that I was always afraid of. And then that happens in all my personal relationships too. And that's why my path has gone from avoidance to connection. That's why I want to help so many people. And by the way, another criticism that will probably come will be, why do you always talk about the insider's view of an avoidant? Because it's my experience. Anyway, thank you for listening. The link for my May 18th jumpstart is in the description. This may be for many of you. Hundreds of people have now come, new people to the work. Please come and work with me in this group. I'm going to teach you how to do the work and the way it was developed. We're going to have small group modules to help you with specific things and using this work in all areas of your life. Thank you, and check out the link.